Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film. I am, of course, Zach. A little bit of a show difference this week. As you can probably already tell, it is just me this week. We had some scheduling conflicts, and then some of my equipment wasn't working from my home. Thus, I am doing the show Han Solo this week. But don't worry, we're going to give you, just a quick little dab of Zach on Film to get you through the holiday week, and then we will be back next week talking about Beast of No Nation, the Netflix exclusive film that came out last month in October, starring Idris Elba. We'll be talking about that next week. But this week, I have a couple things to talk to you about. First off, last week, Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2 released into theaters, and guess what? I went and watched it. I don't know if you guys know, I have a deep, deep love for the Hunger Games book series. It's one of my great hipster horrible moments, really, where I never wanted to read them because everyone was reading them. They're like, oh, they're so good and they're so cool. I'm like, ugh, child's trash. I didn't read them. And then I finally saw a trailer for the Catching Fire movie, and then I read all three books before Catching Fire came out. And I love them. They have a deep, deep place in my heart. So knowing that, I walked to the Mockingjay Part 2 opening night. I'm not gonna spoil anything for the film. I don't want to do that in case you guys haven't gone out and watched Part 2. The ending of the four-part film adaptation of a book trilogy. The common thing that Hollywood does now, take three books, stretch them into four, or take, seven books, stretch them into eight. Take one book, stretch it into three. Good job, Peter Jackson. You win the Hollywood trophy this year. Mockingjay Part 2 picks up right where Part 1 left off, which is what I really liked about Part 1 and 2, where Part 1 picked up right after Movie 2, Catching Fire. Part 2 picks up right after Mockingjay Part 1, which almost like they could have been one giant five-hour film, but thankfully they spared us and split it into two. But of course, watching this, I can't help but wonder, where's the script where it was just Mockingjay, one movie, they cut everything down into, a solid 2 hours, 20 minutes, 2 hours and 30 minutes. I would love to just take a read through of that script to see what they would leave in and what they would take out, because what I loved about Part 1 and Part 2 of Mockingjay is that I thought they captured a lot of what I loved about the books. And that it was not the series that I think people wanted. I don't think Hunger Games as a whole is this film franchise that people expected, especially coming out of Movie 1 and somewhat Movie 2. I don't think as a whole it was this action-packed, young kid-oriented film or film series, but it was really this kind of sophisticated, under-the-radar political movie wrapped around a few action scenes. Because if you watch the Mockingjay films, the action is pretty sparse. It's limited at best, and I think it's used well, but there's not a lot of it. And I think one of the biggest things you could say about this last two films for the series is that they're actually kind of slow. While I enjoy that they ventured into this kind of political idea, which the books are heavily on, I do think they stretched them out too far to kind of justify the two parts of the film, where they could have tightened up the editing a bit and cut a few scenes or cut them down a little bit tighter and saved about 15, 20 minutes off each film. And I think that would have been better overall. I think they drag in certain spots, especially in the middle. And I think it hurts the emotional buildup, especially in this one. I think there is a huge emotional scene at the end that is big and climactic in the books, but I think it really gets brushed over. And I was bracing for the waterworks to start running towards the end of the film, but they didn't come because the movie just didn't give me what I wanted. It didn't pay off in the way that I expected it to, with such a, you know, a huge, I'll say death. You know, it was a death. Everyone dies, and that's when we cry in TV shows, movies now. There's a death in the end of this movie that is very emotional, but it got glossed over really quick. Just bang, bang, boom. Let's move on to other things. So, you know, I think a lot of people did not like book three of the Hunger Games trilogy. I personally did. People had some issues with the way it ended. I personally loved it. And it hit on that in this movie, and that's why I liked it. I do not think these last two specifically are the best films. I think this kind of came in around the high 60s, maybe bumped up to low 70s, and the Rotten Tomato Part 2 did. I think that's justified. I think that is where this movie hits. I don't think it's in the 80s. I certainly don't think it's up in the 90s with Catching Fire, which to me I hold as the gold standard for book adaptations. I think it's the best book adaptation I've ever seen. I also think it's one of the best sequels I've ever seen. That movie was phenomenal, and I don't think it was possible for them to follow it up. So to kind of hold it to that standard is a little too hard. So while I love this movie, I think there's certainly some flaws in it, and I don't think it is the best. Just some other quick notes about the film. This will be, I believe, the last new film that we will see Philip Seymour Hoffman act in. He passed away towards the very ending of filming this movie, and specifically this part of the series of films. And there are some digital body doubles in this, and you can kind of tell, I believe they're towards the end, where you can kind of tell, one, he kind of just drops out of the story, and then at the end when he comes in, there's just something a little glossy about his skin that I think that is where the body doubles for Philip Seymour Hoffman came in. His part as Plutarch in this series has been great. It's been wonderful. He brought his great sense of character acting throughout this film. He was perfect for it. It made me so happy when I saw that he was cast in that role, and so very, very sad when I learned of his passing. So that's my review of Mockingjay Part 2. If you're into the series, absolutely go watch it and finish the storyline. But I don't think it's the best. I think I think it's worth a watch, especially if you're a fan of the series. All right, so I'm going to do just a quick little news roundup. It's really only one story, and then I'm going to look at some box office past numbers of Thanksgiving of yesteryear. First, I was scrolling through my RSS feeds of movie news websites. I saw an interesting article come up from Variety, and it is titled "Harvey Weinstein to Release Fewer Indie Films." So the gist of this is the studio that brought you the darling gems of Clerks, Pulp Fiction, Silver Linings Playbook, and of course, no, don't forget Scary Movie 4, is going to be reducing their output of films starting next year in 2016. Some people said this doesn't come as too much of a shock, as the Weinstein company had suffered a few big box office misses this year, including that Bradley Cooper starring Burnt film, which when I checked over on Box Office Mojo, didn't even make back its $20 million budget with its domestic numbers, which only scored a little over $13 million domestically here. The company also faced layoffs and a failed sale of a TV division to Britain's ITV, British television company over there, which is interesting to note because the article goes on to say that Weinstein Company is currently making about 30% of their revenue from their TV division. So now that they're scaling back on the releases, estimates have said that currently Weinstein Company is putting about 18 films a year from the studio, but now they're going to look down to 8 or 10. In their reduction, they're actually going to be focusing more on their television unit because it did bring in that large percentage of revenue for them. The article also stated that Weinstein Company will kind of move away from acquiring its films through the festival circuit, which is kind of known for. I mean, that's where it picked up Clerks. We've heard Kevin Smith talked about it. That's where he got picked up up at Sundance in Utah. Instead, Weinstein is going to be looking to develop projects from the script up. are going to have a total control over every aspect of the project to make sure, I'm going to guess, that has their flair and touch and know what they want to try to make that big bang for the buck when they finally release it out into the theaters. The big release, of course, you know, Quentin Tarantino, I think, is the Weinstein darling. I haven't heard too much of what their relationship is, but I'm going to guess this guy gets what he wants from the Weinsteins. I'm going to guess they're going to be crossing their fingers coming up in December when Tarantino releases his next Western film, Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, which is actually releasing December 25th. According to Variety, it's got about a reported budget of $62 million. So definitely looking to make that back in this last month of 2015, rolling into 2016. You got to expect this film to get some Oscar buzz. I think Django was nominated for Best Director, Best Script, Best Picture in 2012. You just have to assume that if it's Tarantino, he's got a good shot of getting one of those noms in there, and a good Oscar boost should definitely help the box office there. Looking back at Tarantino's last film, Django Unchained, that brought in $425 million worldwide and reported $100 million budget. So Hateful Eight going to be not costing as much money to the Weinsteins. I think I'm going to get this bet because they shot mostly up in Telluride in kind of one cabin, it seems like. So that kind of limits the money having to be spent on traveling and putting up crew in different places all the time. Of course, you know, The Hateful Eight is going to be up some stiff competition for the box office, because a week before that, J.J. Abrams, Disney, Star Wars, The Force Awakens will be releasing the week before The Hateful Eight comes into theaters, and you have to assume that it's going to dominate the box office. I believe I saw let me scroll back through Variety really quick. The Force Awakens is heading for a massive $170 million plus opening weekend. They've already crushed sales with pre-sales and IMAX and just regular theaters like that. They're going to win the box office holiday weekend, even with The Hateful Eight coming out. There's no doubt about it. I wouldn't be surprised to do another $100+ million weekend that, especially because you're going to have families heading out to the theater for that, the family tradition of going to the movie theater on Christmas Day, which I didn't actually know was a thing really until I did Christmas with my mom and stepdad down in Arizona. And we went and watched the very family-friendly film, The Wolf on Wall Street. So that's how we spent our Christmas afternoon, just watching some bankers smart, some coke after some hookers butts. So, for Christmas, fun for all. Back to Hateful Eight. I think they have a good shot of making their budget back, especially domestically. Regardless of Star Wars, I think Tarantino has a following. Oddly enough, I'm going to guess the audience that is Tarantino crosses over heavily with Star Wars, mainly because everyone in the world watches Star Wars. But I'm going to guess there's definitely some crossover there. But Tarantino, you got to assume he's going to make his money back. I don't know if his films has ever lost any money, even if going against stiff competition. I believe when Django released, it released the same time as Les Mis in theaters, and 2 weeks before Django, the first installment of the Hobbit trilogy released, which was a pretty big movie as well, and it fared fine in the theaters. So I think the Weinsteins should not be worried about the box office run of Hateful Eight and the slightest. But it is going to be sad to see the Weinsteins taking a step back and not releasing as many films throughout the year. They've always been known to release films that have Oscar contention. They were behind The Artist, The Silver Linings Playbook won a lot of Oscars when it came out. Pulp Fiction, I guess, I can't remember if it won an Oscar or if it was just over in the Cannes Film Festival. They're always releasing films that are up in the awards. So you have to assume they're not going to back away from those. They're going to be making more high quality films. Of course, that's all speculative and to taste of what what you consider a high quality film. Speaking of families going out to the theater on a holiday weekend, Thanksgiving is this week in America, and people will be flocking to the theaters. Pixar will be releasing The Good Dinosaur, which I am super duper duper excited about because, of course, Pixar, you can't go wrong with that. So I decided to give a look back in time about the best Thanksgiving openings for films. You know, holidays, you think people are free, kids are out of school, take them to the theater, entertain them for a couple hours. You think they would do pretty well, and I think statistically they do just fine. I went over to Box Office Mojo right now, looking at it right this moment. Thanksgiving weekends from 1982 to the present, looking at 3-day openings. This is not all movies, because if you do that, it skews it because it brings in movies released around the same time. I'm talking holiday openings. Number one, just a couple years ago, Frozen. Actually, believe it or not, Disney destroys in this category. I never realized that they released so many movies on this this holiday weekend. Number one is Frozen. Number two is Toy Story 2. Frozen brought in $67 million on the opening. Toy Story 2, a whole $10 million less at $57 million. And then Tangled, Enchanted. And then number five, throwing it back all the way to 1996. Oh yeah, we're talking straight up animation. 101 Dalmatians brought in $33 million. And then A Bug's Life. And then finally, at that point, do we get a Warner Brothers film with Four Christmases, which wasn't that the Vince Vaughn, Reese Witherspoon flick. That's not a bad film. I've watched it a couple times. Pretty good. Then we're back to Buena Vista, Unbreakable, and then The Muppets, Toy Story number one, coming in at $29 million at number 10. Look at this. Jumping back to the 80s, Back to the Future Part 2 comes in at 11, making $27 million on its 3-day opening weekend over Thanksgiving. Just scrolling through really quick to see if anything stands out as significant. Aladdin, another Disney, came in at 24 with $19 million. Nothing much after that. There hasn't been a great deal of movies greatly released over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. If you look at all movies over the 3-day stretch of Thanksgiving, Catching Fire from the Hunger Games films actually tops number one, then Frozen, then Harry Potter, Sorcerer's Stone, Toy Story 2 jumps in at four, and then The Hunger Games Part 1, Mockingjay in number five. Those three films obviously released the week or two before Thanksgiving, but then had a big jump there due to the holiday. So, you know, holidays, good for the theaters. It's going to be interesting how the holiday box office plays out this Christmas. There's a lot of big films releasing, but of course none bigger than Star Wars Force Awakens. I just don't fathom the amount of money that the Disney execs and shareholders are going to roll in, when that film finally releases. So that's all I have for you this week. A little short, truncated episode of Zach on Film. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy your holiday weekend. But if you have some spare time, head over to MajorSpoilers.com. You can find some news and all those goodies and podcasts that you enjoy. You can find the Zach on Film podcast posting page. This very episode will be posted right there. If you're not listening there already, jump down to the comments. You can give your thoughts and reactions. Maybe you went and saw Mockingjay Part 2 and you have some reactions on that. Leave them right in the comments. I'll, of course, read them. Try to reply as swiftly as I can. While you are there, you can also click on the Amazon.com shopping link. It's going to be Black Friday when this episode comes out, and then Cyber Monday. You know, Amazon's going to be releasing crazy deals all weekend and next week. Don't miss out on helping Major Spoilers by using that link. Shop to your heart's content. It won't cost you any extra by using that link, but a little bit will come back to Major Spoilers to help keep this pop culture conglomerate rolling. It's not really a conglomerate, it's just a company, but it sounds better if you say conglomerate. But that's it for this week's episode of Zach on Film. We'll see you next week with Beast of No Nation.
podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.